Chapter 3. The Doctrine of Imminent Harm. A Law That Hurts Children. Federal law dictates state law. Counties must follow both state and federal law for their laws to be valid or enforceable. The Doctrine of Imminent Harm is a federal law that holds that a child is not to be removed from a parent unless the child is in imminent harm. As I have seen it translated, children are to remain in the home unless they are bruised or bleeding. Children can be pretty badly beaten without obvious signs of trauma. Countless children are molested without being discovered by authorities. Many communities are struggling to have their police and court systems deal effectively with abused children. Two sisters, Anne, age 5, and Sharon, age 7, lived with a crack cocaine-using mother. Police had been called to their home 49 times over 3 years. The juvenile officer confessed to me that she had heard the mother on several occasions hatefully tell Sharon, her daughter, that she wished Sharon were dead and that she, the child, had never been born. Multiple police reports were made of gunfire, drug use, and prostitution at the home. A known prostitute lived with the now fatherless family. The 7-year-old had been sexually abused. I believe that Sharon had been prostituted. Many opportunities existed to take these poor, abused girls from their insane and abusive mother, but the doctrine of imminent harm forbade police to remove the children. For 3 years, the police were aware of the bizarre happenings within this home, yet left these girls to be hated and tortured by their mother. This was an educated and suburban 21st century police force. Imminent harm allows a variety of evils to be heaped on trapped children. It keeps children living within tragic circumstances with no accountability of the parent or the county. If laws are ever going to protect children, the doctrine of imminent harm will need to include the psychological damage so obviously perpetrated upon these girls. Then the police might have taken the tortured children out of the home on the first or second police call to the home, with far better chances for the children's recovery. 3 years of daily exposure to drugs, violence, and sexual abuse creates patterns of behaviors that will not easily be counseled away. A percentage of experienced police officers become jaded to their continual exposure to children of drug users, violence, and criminals. Some officers don't go out of their way to bring attention to the plight of the children that they know are suffering. Policing is a complex business that demands many skills to be an effective officer. Domestic issues are not at the top of the list of the police officers that I have come to know. Most police officers would rather not be put in the role of policing families. The dynamics of enforcing laws against fathers and mothers concerning the condition and treatment of their children requires a level of understanding and training that not many police officers receive. Police friends have shared their stories about being unable to withhold their laughter as an 11-year-old girl told them about her sexual abuse in the home. It was, in fact, a horrific story. These officers simply didn't have empathy for her family life. They did not view her as credible or human enough to take her seriously. I can only assume that after seeing hundreds of mentally ill and abused children in toxic homes, some officers become insensitive. It's certainly not an ideal situation for children to be seeking justice. The only reason Anne and Sharon were finally removed from this home was that during the 49th police call to the home, the older girl tried to kill the younger one by jumping on her neck. Children who have been terribly abused often do terrible things to other people. Mother lost custody of her children. No one in her family supported her keeping custody. I do not believe that the sexual abuse issues in this case were ever fully recognized or addressed. I am also convinced that child sex abuse is grossly underreported in the best child protection systems. Annually, about 300,000 children are officially recognized as sexually abused. Minnesota reported 897 child sexual abuse cases in 2002. If that's true, I knew of about 40 of them, and I was only one of about 300 guardian ad litems that year. I don't believe Minnesota children experienced only 897 cases of child sex abuse in 2002. Abused and neglected children rightfully fear authority. the most important adult authority figure in their life, beat, molested, or neglected them to the extent that the state removed them from their own home for their own safety. I suspect that less than 1 out of 10 children who have been brought through the child protection system would ever voluntarily spill their guts to a police officer or any unfamiliar, well-meaning teacher or other adult authority figure. How does a frightened 7-year-old child who has been living in fear in the painful, insane world of drugs and sexual abuse for 3 or 4 years even begin to attend to her studies in a classroom? Anxiety and fear consume children who have been abused. They have little or no attention for the subject matter. She is a very needy child who is not able to relax, do her work, enjoy her friends, or the school experience. Trust will always be an issue. I've seen it go on far into adulthood. Trust issues last forever. Many of these children will never have a significant other. They simply can't allow people that close to them. The pain of loss and lack of trust is too great. This is a very real mental awareness that evolves from not being able to trust the most important adult in her life. For children who are severely abused over long periods, trust issues and extreme behaviors learned for self-protection become rock hard, constant, and detrimental to living normally in our society. Their abnormal behaviors brand them as different. Their difficult behaviors result in their being treated poorly by teachers, authority figures, and peers. Children in school are rough on each other. Adults don't care why invisible children don't follow orders or behave so poorly. There are simply consequences. Without adequate counseling and treatment, these children will continue to disappoint us in school and in the community and receive the consequences of prison and pregnancy. Children who have been seriously abused act out in painful ways. They have explosive behaviors. They stab people, light fires, and hurt themselves and those around them. Starved children cut open furniture and hide food. Love-starved, neglected, and abandoned children have a giant hole in them that can't be filled. Abused children will do terrible things in order to try to fill that hole. Invisible children desperately want and need love, but they do things that ensure they will never receive love. Abused and neglected children can't trust enough to have love. They often can't be taught to trust authority or anyone else, and sometimes this is forever. Imagine going through life without ever being able to trust another person. Children who have lost their mother through neglect and abuse often are unable to relearn how to trust or how to love. Children believe they are responsible for the bad things that have happened to them. Abused and neglected children can hate themselves with a persistent self-loathing that hurts to observe, isn't easily described, and doesn't lend itself well to therapy. Molested children feel cheap and dirty. Molested boys have the additional stigma of homosexuality and loss of manhood issues. I know a 65-year-old professional man who, after 50 years of therapy, still fights the demons from the things that happened to him in his childhood. 20% of American Indian ninth grade girls and 17% of Chicano Latino ninth grade girls tried to kill themselves during the 1995 school year. About 8% of the African American, Asian, and white student population attempted suicide that year also. Medicating children without ample monitoring of the results is wrong, and it occurs all too often. There is no question that meds keep some children from hurting themselves, their peers, and authority figures. Meds without sufficient therapy are a questionable benefit in the long term. These are complex issues, and I wish to stress the need for more dialogue and better answers. Drugs for attention deficit and other behavior-modifying drugs have become a greater cost to Americans than antibiotics and asthma drugs. The medicating of young Americans is a statistical phenomenon that needs attention. While immediate dangerous behaviors may be controlled through successful drug regimens, long-term coping skills and mental health programs will more likely create meaningful change within the child. It is all too common for adolescents to quit their legal drug program and begin to medicate themselves in other ways, illegal drugs and alcohol. Once the child quits the drug program, unmanageable behaviors return, and life can become troublesome for the child and the community. It's hard to overstate the outrageous and dangerous behaviors these children exhibit when they are not being treated for their mental health problems. Our high crime and incarceration rates are a growing reflection of our inadequate solution to this problem. It is learned coping skills and behavior modification that will keep children out of the criminal justice system, not medications without therapy. Abandoned children respond well to art, music, dance, and theater. Mentors and sincere adults can also have a big impact on the development of an abused child. Someone or something needs to fill the void. School, marginal attempts at therapy, and all the efforts of well-intentioned people have made almost no impact on the long-term improvement of children I have worked with. Consistent and long-term mental health programs work best to heal damaged children. According to the U.S. Department of State, America has spent $4 trillion on its military since the end of the Cold War. Voters are steadfastly behind the spending of security dollars. Strong arguments can be made that these military dollars have served to create a less secure and more hostile world rather than a safer, better educated, and smarter world. Our communities complain about the spending of tax money for schools and programs that could help educate and uplift our community. At the same time, we continue to support tax breaks and the giant costs of war. If we were to build more schools and wage less war, we would have safer cities and a much smaller population of troubled citizens. In many communities, there is a great shortfall of support for mental health services for abused and abandoned children. Too many communities use medication instead of education and therapy to behavior problems of troubled children. Dollars invested in mental health services and early childhood programs have proven to be far and away the best investments a society can make. The Danes, Swedes, Finns, Norwegians, Japanese, Germans, French, and all the other industrialized nations that have embraced education and rehabilitation have had better results. Call to action. Mental health issues are underaddressed in our communities. While there may not be simple solutions to the complex problems of children with mental illness, it is obvious that their needs are not being addressed adequately today. It should be clear that Prozac without therapy is wrong, and that early mental health therapy will have far better results than waiting until the symptoms explode into dangerous behavior. Become a proponent of mental health services for children. As you become more aware of the chasm that exists between what is available and what is necessary, you will find it easy to lobby for change. The insurance industry and politicians have stonewalled this issue for many years. It's of primary concern for invisible children, and it wouldn't hurt the rest of us to have more access to mental health services either. Insurance companies fear the added costs and have a giant lobby to persuade our political leaders that change is not needed. Let your political leaders know that you expect them to provide mental health services in your schools and for abused and neglected children. Regularly provide your local governing officials information on the need for more mental health services within your schools, child protection, and juvenile justice system. Lobbying is big business. There are about 67,000 lobbyists calling on American lawmakers. Abused and neglected children can't call their legislators, nor can they hire a lobbyist. It's up to concerned citizens to lobby for laws that affect the quality of the lives of neglected children. Email, write, and call your lawmakers.